Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.
Erev Tov, good evening. Welcome everyone to Pardes. We have a very special evening, I think, ahead of us. And as soon as everyone gets settled, we can begin. Let me introduce myself. I am Leah Rosenthal. I'm on the faculty here at Pardes. Actually, I have had the pleasure of teaching Talmud in the Bit Midrash of Pardes for the last 30 years. For the last nearly 40 years, I've had the great privilege of being part of the world of serious Torah study for women. Watching as women's Batei Midrash and egalitarian Batei Midrash grow and flourish, seeing the quantity and quality of study programs offered to women increase in ways that have unquestionably impacted and changed the Jewish world. A midrash in Kohelet Rabbah, referencing the pasuk, Adam Echad Mi'elif Matzati, one in a thousand I have found, describes the world of Torah scholarship as follows. B'noag shebaolam elif bnei adam nichnasim mikra, יוצאים מהם 100 למשנה, יוצאים מהם 10 לתלמוד, יוצא מהם 1 להוראה. הדא הוא דכתיב, אדם אחד מאלף מצאתי. It is the way of the world that 1,000 people enter the study of scripture, 100 emerge to study Mishnah, 10 emerge to study Talmud, and 1 emerges to הוראה, instruction. That is the meaning of the verse, one in a thousand have I found. This description presents a familiar reality of educational systems. As study advances and intensifies, the number of participants decreases. The learning process is a funnel-like procedure, culminating in the emergence of singular individuals who persist and persevere throughout the process and who emerge to take on the responsibility of leading and developing the field. Yotze lehura'a. In classic rabbinic sources, this phrase usually refers to instruction of halakha. To emerge to hora'ah is to become a mure halakha. This is the final result for a select few of the intense and continuous process of learning. This activity is perceived by Chazal not as a privilege, but as a responsibility. The Talmud harshly criticizes those who have reached the required level of knowledge and skill, yet refrain from taking on the mantle of hora'ah. With reference to the verse in Mishlei, Ki rabim chalalim epila ve'atzumim kol harugea, for many are those she has struck dead, and numerous are her victims, the Talmud expounds, Atzumim kol harugea, ze talmid shehigia lehora'ah ve'ino mure. Numerous are her victims. This refers to a scholar who has reached hora'ah and does not instruct. Neglecting the task of halachic leadership is destructive and damaging to the Jewish people. It diminishes our numbers and leaves victims suffering and in pain. The irony is, of course, not lost on any of us this evening. The continuation of the verse in Kohelet cited above, Adam echad me'elef matzati, ve'isha bechol eile lo matzati. That one in a thousand individual is never a woman. How astonished the author of this midrash would be to meet our three panelists this evening. I personally would prefer to believe that after recovering from his initial amazement, he would actually be pleased to discover how these three one-in-a-thousand women actually are a confirmation of his insight. As thousands of women entered Batei Midrash, some continuing into further and further advanced and intense study, they too begin to produce those extraordinary individuals who emerge ready for Hora'ah. These singular women, too, will feel the calling and the responsibility lying upon them to become Moreh Torah and to lead the Torah and the Jewish community to meet the challenge of our times. It is with great pleasure that Pardes hosts this panel of women occupied with the world of Hora'ah, active participants in perhaps the highest of all communal Jewish callings, the responsibilities of halachic leadership. I know I speak for everyone here when I say I'm eager to hear them share their experiences, their thoughts, their concerns and hopes regarding this new reality developing within the Jewish world. structure this evening, we will hear first from each one of our participants, each one of our panelists, an introductory presentation, 7 to 10 minutes. Then we'll have a second round in which the panelists themselves can respond to each other and elaborate or respond to some of the things they've heard from each other. And then we'll open up the floor to hear from members of the audience who wish to ask and clarify some of the things we'll be hearing. First panelist to speak tonight will be Rav Rachel Berkowitz. Rav Rachel Berkowitz is a senior lecturer in Mishnah, Talmud, and Halakha here at the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies, where she has been teaching for almost 20 years. She writes articles and lectures widely, both in Israel and abroad, on topics concerning women and Jewish law. Rav Rachel is a founding member of Congregation Shira Chadasha, a halachic partnership synagogue, and she serves on their halachic committee. In June 2015, Rav Rachel received rabbinic ordination from Rabbis Herzl Hefter and Daniel Sperber. Rav Rachel Berkowitz is the editor and the author, is the editor of Hilchot Nashim, about which she will speak, and author of a chapter on women receiving Kaddish in this book. Bevakasha.
Thank you, Leah, for that beautiful introduction. And I'm really pleased to be here sitting with my esteemed colleagues and to be speaking to you on this special occasion. Halakha is the life force of the Jewish people. It is the eternal path in which the Jew walks, bringing Torah text into living, breathing Avodat Hashem, the service of God. In the 21st century, we've seen how women have enriched the field of education, of medicine, of business, of politics. We try to educate our children of all genders to be active participants in building communities. They should be involved in thinking about what the educational system looks like, what's going on in the Bakri Knesset. And so it seems essential that in this area, which is so important, how Jews live their lives, right? Because halakha is that, right? We think of it as Jewish law, but Jewish law really is, and when you think of the Hebrew word halakha, holech, it's a word of movement. It's how Torah is lived out in real life situations, in real people's lives, in communities' lives, in families' lives. And so it is essential that here, too, we hear women's voices. It can't be that half of the community is silent on something that is so important, where in every other realm today, at least in the modern world that we all live in, we want to hear women's voices. We think it's essential to hear women's voices. We want every part of the community to be an active and contributing member. And so, as Leah talked about, we've had this revolution of Torah study that's happened over the last 50, 75 years. And what's interesting is to really follow that development. The Midrash you quoted, I think, really speaks to that, is that when women sort of first broke onto the Torah scene, they felt much more comfortable in the realm of teaching Tanakh. I think maybe it was a breath of fresh air. They could do something different. They didn't maybe have the feeling of I must study Talmud sitting on my shoulder, or I must study Halakha sitting on my shoulder. And they opened up a whole new study of Tanakh in a serious high level that hadn't been in the modern world up until this point. And we had women who entered the field of the study of Talmud and Gemara, but slowly the group gets smaller. And it gets even smaller still when we talk about women who are interested in teaching halakha, and even smaller still when we're interested in women, we see women who are willing to write halakha. This project that this book is a part of, called Hilchot Nashim, where this is just the first volume, and hopefully soon volume two will come out, we look for women to write articles. We want it to be we want to hear voices of many different women. It's actually very, very hard to find women who are willing to write on halakha. And I'm glad you quoted that midrash, because maybe it's the same for men, although proportionally you see so many more men. I'm curious to hear why you think that is. I have some thoughts. I don't know if it's because there's still a feeling that this is the realm of men, and it's not so acceptable for women to do this, or if there's a feeling on the side of women, which I'm going to make this point, but I'm going to come back to it later, that we're going to be held to some like higher level and people are going to scrutinize. You might think that this book has way too many footnotes if you've opened it. And that is because I think I felt I have to cover all my bases. Every time I say something, I have to show that I know what I'm talking about, that a source says what I'm talking about, and that I can back up what I'm doing, because I guess I'll talk for myself. I have a personal fear of being looked at in a way that I feel maybe isn't going to happen for my male colleagues. And so possibly that is, there's a greater fear of how you're going to be perceived. Or lastly, I think that, and this is something that I also find is a challenge, it's a big responsibility to write on halakha. It's a really big responsibility. It's a risk that the posek has to take to say, I know something and I'm going to make a decision about this, or I want to tell you what I know, because other people might be basing their behavior on that, and you don't want them to mess up when it comes to halakha. And I think that's a risk that every posek has to take, to have the courage and the bravery to do that. And it's something I have to give myself pep talks about a lot. And I still find difficult. And even things that I would judge for myself in a, maybe a slightly more radical way, I feel very, very hesitant to say for other people, because I feel like there's a very huge responsibility. So that's thing one. I think that being involved in halakha is a really risky business. We advertise this as talking about women specifically writing halakha, and I wanted to address the question if I think there's a difference really between women and men writing halakha. Now, you don't know me, most of you sitting in the audience. I'm not one who likes to talk about differences between men and women. And so, in theory, I would like to say, I don't think there should be a difference in the way that men and women write halakha. I think there might be differences of personalities across the gender spectrum, and that could affect things. That being said, I think that a really good posek is someone, or poseket, is someone who understands the questioner, and who can really hear what the questioner is asking and see what the specific situation of the questioner is, and then answer directly to the person who's being asked. And because of that, I think, obviously, that there is a whole realm of halakha in the world concerning women's bodies, concerning things that are outgrowths of women's social situations, of experiences that women have in the world that may be different than men, where it is extraordinarily important for women to be involved in this area. Obviously, that is why sort of the first opening up of this area has been yoetzot halacha, women who rule on issues having to do with family purity and things having to do with the woman's body. It is funny that I say that I don't think there should be a difference between men and women, and I would also argue that I think it's very important to write halakha, that women should write halakha in all areas of halakha, even though I just said it's understandable and makes sense for them to write specifically about women. I think that we'll really know we've reached the sea when women are answering questions on kashrut and Shabbat, and I think that that is really starting to happen. I see on Mesivat Nefesh, which I hope you're going to talk about, website, I went to check there to try to see what kind, this is a website that Beit Hillel does where women rabbinic authorities are answering questions that people are writing in. From what I could see from the questioners, both majority are women writing in, but there's men writing in as well. And it looked like about maybe 50% of the questions related to something to do with women, but the other types of questions were across the halachic spectrum, not particularly for women. It's ironic that I tell you this, because obviously this book is called Hilchot Nashim and specifically focuses on things having to do with women. And as you heard from my bio, that is something that I like to talk about a lot. And I think the reason is because, at least from my personal experiences growing up in the Orthodox world and discussing my desire to be actively involved in mitzvot performance with male rabbanim, I have found that, unfortunately, not all of them, but many of them were not able to hear me and my questions in the way that I felt I was asking them. Sometimes my halachic questions or desire to understand about women's role within ritual was met as a threat, as a perception that I had some agenda other than what I thought was the simple agenda of wanting to do mitzvot and to do avodat Hashem and to be an active participant in all the texts that I was learning. And so part of the goal of this series is to empower women to be more knowledgeable about their specific practice. I didn't look at what time I started. Okay, you're gonna let me finish. What I would say is unique about this book, and I'm curious if you think this is unique to women writing halacha, because I see a similarity in your writings as well, is that the style that at least I chose to do as a teacher, and was the style that I created the style for this book, even though I didn't write all the chapters, was one in which all the sources are brought in full, and it's more like a learning guide. Traditional shutim, traditional responsa, there is a question asked, and Rabbani would quote sources in the course of the responsa, but it would just be like a reference. Yabia Omer says this, and maybe quote two or three words. What happens in Hilchot Nishim and in your book, Malka, and I even saw what I loved about your response on Mishivat Nafesh, that at the end you put the sources, you quoted the sources in full, is to bring the sources, to empower the learner to see what the sources say for themselves. Because I think this aspect of education is essential in getting more women involved in halakha, but for both for men and women, to know what the halakha says, not to just do blindly, but to do from understanding. And so we bring the sources in both Hebrew and English. There's explanation of the sources. And the idea is that people should make informed choices. I just want to read a little bit from our preface so you can understand. Okay. Yeah. 2 minutes? Okay. It says, this series presents an in-depth look at halachic topics that affect a woman's obligation and involvement in Jewish ritual life. These essays aim to increase awareness of relevant halachic issues among women and men so that they can make deliberate choices about their observance. We believe that placing great value on the Jewish tradition of learning and developing the skills needed to understand halacha and its processes are critical in maintaining a passionate and informed commitment to observance among Jews. One of the main goals of this series is to clarify what the texts actually say, with the hope that increased knowledge and better understanding of the reasons behind common practice will lead to increased observance. The aim of an in-depth analysis of these sources is that the reader will learn not only what the normative halacha is, but will understand how it developed, and that under the surface of what is considered normative halacha is a dialectic of multiple and valid attempts at understanding and interpreting our earliest halachic literature. Right? In these essays, the rumitic texts themselves are presented not as references, but as the main focus of discussion. And then it goes on to say, that the goal is to become more knowledgeable about the rich halachic discussion on each topic and to find your place in the chain of Masoret, the tradition. And that, I think, is really what the main goal of this book is. The three topics that we chose to start don't seem like they're directly connected. It's women reciting Kaddish, women saying Birkat HaGomel, and women reading Megillat Esther. The reason that those topics were chosen is these are the areas in which JOFA got the most questions and calls into their office, particularly with women and Kaddish. This is an area where women who maybe didn't consider themselves feminists, that dirty, dirty word, or didn't think of themselves as people who were active. They never dreamed of wanting to get an Aliyah LaTorah or to read anything from anywhere or to lead anything. But suddenly, unfortunately, when a loved one passed away, they wanted the vehicle of tradition. They wanted halakha. They wanted to live their lives and walk through life as a traditional Jew does. And they wanted that miskeret. They wanted that framework of the mourning ritual. And then suddenly, you're at a very vulnerable time when you lose a loved one, and you don't know what you're supposed to be doing, and it's you sort of alone. It's not something you're doing in community in the sense of a whole group of other people are doing it. And you need the approval of maybe your shul rav, or you're on a vacation somewhere and you're going to a shul you've never been to. And so the goal was really to empower people to say, here's what the sources say. These sources can help you be in dialogue with your community rav, with your family members, whatever it is you needs to be. And the last thing I'm going to say, and I'm going to end with this, is that we chose not to give a single line psak. We tried to have the goal be that a plethora of options were available to women. So if you're a woman who wants to say Kaddish quietly when other men are saying it, you can understand the sources of why that would be okay. If you're a woman who says, I'm going to say Kaddish no matter what, no matter when, even if no one else is saying it, there are sources that support you, and you could have a conversation with your Rav about that, right? We didn't, and I even showed sources about, if you don't want to say Kaddish, there are other things you can do to remember your loved one and to help the ilui of their neshama, to help their soul. And so the goal was to have as wide a spectrum of possible of halachic options that women could understand what was best for them, with the hope that it would change halachic practice of people, and it would affect their lives in a meaningful and rich way. Okay. I will stop for now.
Thank you very much. We will hear more from Rachel. Rabbanit Dr. Jenny Rosenfeld serves as the Manhiga Ruchanit in Efrat. Rabbanit Dr. Jenny Rosenfeld serves as the Manhiga Ruchanit in Efrat, appointed by Rabbi Shlomo Riskin, and also serves as the director of the Beit Din for Financial Matters in Efrat. She received a Heter Hora'ah from Rabbi Shlomo Riskin and Rav Shuki Reich after completing studies at the Susie Bradfield Women's Institute for Halachic Leadership at Midrashet Lindenbaum. A graduate of Stern College for Women, Jenny completed the Yeshiva University Graduate Program in Advanced Talmudic Studies for Women, along with an MS in Jewish Education at the Azrieli Graduate School. Rabbanit Jenny holds a PhD in English from the Graduate Center of the City University of New York, where she wrote her dissertation on Talmudic rereadings toward a modern Orthodox sexual ethic as a Wexner Graduate Fellow. She co-authored Et Le'ehov, The Newlywed's Guide to Physical Intimacy, which is also on sale later. Jenny was named one of the 36 under 36 by the Jewish Week in 2008. She too contributed a chapter to Hilchot Nashim on women and Birkat HaGomel. Rabbanit Dr. Jenny Rosenfeld.
Thank you. Okay. Growing up as a child in Riverdale, New York, I had a pediatrician named Dr. Kaysen, Alav HaShalom, my parents loved and I hated. And he was a man. I realized by the name you can't tell. When I was about 7, 8, 9, I came up with a plan. And I put on a bathing suit under all of my clothes so that when the doctor would say to me, take off all of your clothes, even your underwear, I would have the bathing suit on underneath. Several years later, Dr. Kaysen brought a woman into his practice, and he said explicitly, this is for you, Jenny. And then that woman became my doctor. Today, there are some doctors that I go to that are men, and some doctors that I go to that are women. But I have a choice. And I think that today, when we live in a world of endless choice, a world of Amazon, of Google, we need to have choice also in who to ask our halachic, personal, pastoral questions to. We can't only have one option. And when I think about women and women entering the halachic discourse, maybe I'll say a few words about kind of the larger issue, not just women writing, I'll try to come back to that also, but also the issue of women being an address for people's halachic questions, which I think is so essential. As Rav Rachel said, it's essential for women about women's issues. And the truth is that in my work in Efrat, many of the first questions that I got were from women on women's issues, permanent makeup, non-permanent makeup, various types of nail polish. I received a whole education in beauty, really from the questions that I've gotten. But it's not just for women that women need to be there. It's for the entire community. Because with time, I have definitely received questions from men as well. And I'm not sure what the statistics would be today in terms of how many men I speak to and how many women I speak to. I would say it's probably not 50-50, but it could very well be 60-40, okay? So women need to be there for the whole community. Another thing that I found in terms of women, and I wonder if my colleagues have found this also, is that there's a sense of a woman in a rabbinic position as being less threatening. And I know that people have said to me explicitly they didn't find an address, and then they saw this new role, this new person, and they decided, let me come and speak to you. What do I have to lose? And I think that there's a feeling in that women's halachic leadership is something that's so new that it doesn't yet have a tradition. It doesn't yet have, you know, the suit, the tie, the beard, this sort of intimidating image even in people's minds, in a way that people feel more free to go and to try it out. And I've had people who've come, you know, for a conversation that might start off as a very neutral conversation to test the waters, and then feel that maybe they can mention things that are more personal, as they wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable mentioning to a male colleague. So I think, you know, really beyond the theory, beyond the talk of feminism or not the talk of feminism, I think that the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And I think that obviously my colleagues who have much more experience than I do could say it more, but I feel that even in the several years that I've been in this position, I could say that people are coming. People are coming, are asking me halachic questions, are asking for guidance through difficult stages in their life, through divorce, mental illness, financial crisis, issues with their children, various junctures, and that shows me that there are people who have been living in the community who haven't had an address, and who feel now that they do have an address. I want to say a few things about the issue of writing. So one thing that Rav Rachel mentioned is the Meshivat Nefesh website. With the development of Ask the Rabbi websites of all sorts in both Hebrew and English, a project began about a year and a half ago through the Beit Hillel Rabbinic Organization called Meshivat Nefesh, where a group of about 20 Rabbaniyot that alternate in answering questions that come into this website of Meshivat Nefesh. And questions come in from women, and it's true that it is primarily women who ask, but men as well, from all over the country, from all different backgrounds, and they're asking their questions on this website, and they're being answered by female Rabbaniyot. I think that one of the things that the website aimed to do, and we get together periodically for meetings and for training sessions, there was an agenda from the very start, because if you look at the various Ask the Rabbi websites, there are some where a question will be asked with great emotion from the questioner, and it'll be ultimately a question that could have a short answer. And sometimes there'll be a one-line answer, okay? And one of the things that we said when we're starting this project is that that's not what we're about. We're going to give every questioner not only an answer on the halachic level, and in the background we'll give the halachic sources on which we use to build the answer, but we're also going to show them that we hear them. So there's an actual, I don't know if I should be, if this is for public knowledge, but there's an actual instruction that in the first line of the answer, there needs to be a relationship, to what was actually said. And if someone has a question about a death in their family or about an illness, then we start out with words of empathy. And we end off with the words of empathy, and the halachic analysis is in the middle. At the same time, it's very important for me to say, because I saw one of the questions of this evening, is there a difference in how men and women write halacha? I feel like it's a question that kind of is begging an answer where we'll put our foot in our mouth, and I'm not willing to do that. I think that, firstly, there's no way that we can say today, given the quantity of halachic writing by men and the dearth of halachic writing by women, we simply can't make any broad statements. And I believe that if we ripped the cover off this book and we gave it to people and did, you know, like a blind test, and we told half of them it was written by a man and half that it was written by a woman, you would have everyone's, you know, gender stereotypes coming out. So for me, women writing halacha is not about a more empathetic writing of halacha, even though perhaps there are some women who will write more empathetically. I don't know. But for me, it's about bringing everyone to the table. Okay? Because the people who are writing the shutim, who are writing halachic responsa, are in a dialogue with each other, are in a dialogue of Judaism and of halacha moving forward. And if women are not writing, then women are not at that table. Okay? But to talk about differences in the writing, I feel might be premature. I think that I'll end here with just one sentence, which is that the hesitation to put things in writing is something that I see with myself, and it's something that I see with friends of mine who, you know a lot more than I know, but are hesitant to write something. There's a real tradition, and anyone who's studied the responsa literature can see that there are even certain responsa where the person writing the responsa will write, I didn't want to put this into writing, but because of the various extenuating circumstances, I'm writing it. There is a sense in which putting something in writing labels it in a way that maybe it shouldn't be, or puts it out for mass consumption also in a way that it shouldn't be. Because sometimes there are rulings that are given to one person that are based on a unique situation. And, you know, once they go viral on the internet with only the bottom line and not the case and not the details and not the reasoning, there's something that, you know, that happens. And once one puts something into writing, one opens themselves up to that risk. So I guess I'll end off just with a prayer that this book should be the beginning of women taking that step forward, of having the courage to write halacha, and that the world around us should take it in the way that it's written and honor that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rabbanit Jenny. As said before, we will have the opportunity to follow up on some of the. At this point, we're turning to hear from, I think, a face that's a little less familiar with the Pardes Bet Midrash. And we're very privileged to have Eshet HaHalacha, Malka Piotrkowski, with us this evening. I think we're switching a little bit sociological circles here, and the opportunity here in Pardes, first of all, to hear Native Israeli Hebrew spoken is going to be quite exciting. Malka will speak in Hebrew, and I think it's our listening to maybe some of the nuances or interested in how in a different setting, in a different sociological setting, from deep within the Dati Lumi community here in Israel, impacting society of Israel, Israeli society in very deep ways. It will be interesting to hear your perspective. I will introduce... No, I will not. But I will introduce you in Hebrew. Malka Piotrkowski עמדה בראש מדרשת לינדנבאום. I should, okay. Okay. Eshet Halacha Malka Piotrkovsky stood at the head of Midrashet Lindenbaum and at the head of its halachic program. From 2010, when she concluded her work at Lindenbaum, she's been teaching at various midrashot, Migdal Oz, Matan, Hasharon in Ra'anana, Midrashet in Prat. Malka is amongst the founders of Forum Takana, which is a forum to hear and handle charges of sexual harassment within the Dati Lumi community. She is on the board of Ma'ale, Bet Sefer Ma'ale, a school for cinema, film, and communications. She is on the public committee for Mavoi Satum, which treats and handles cases of agunot and get refusal. That's true. It's a very long list. She really is involved in so many aspects of Israeli society, impacting really throughout. Maybe just I will mention as an indication of her impact that in 2015, Malka was selected and honored to light one of the masuot on Yom HaTzmaut, on the 67th anniversary of the State of Israel, an indication of how deeply she really is impacting Israeli society at large and how much that is acknowledged and respected. So, Bakasha.
תודה רבה לאה, ותודה לכם שאתם מאפשרים לי לדבר עברית. אני פשוט I'm ashamed with my English. It's not good enough to talk. תודה רבה לאה, יש לי התרגשות גדולה, כי לאה ואני לימדנו יחד לפני הרבה שנים, והיה לי עונג צרוף ממש להקשיב לכל אחת מהדוברות, וגם יש לי את הזכות שאין לכן טיפה להתייחס, כי אמרתם דברים שאני מאוד מסכימה איתם ורוצה לפתח אותם טיפה. אני הגעתי להלכה לגמרי במקרה, אבל זה באמת לא מקרה. אחרי הרבה שנים של לימוד והוראת גמרא, שצבעו את השנים הראשונות של היותי אדם בוגר, מקים משפחה, צבעו אותם בטוב ובמתיקות, באמת. אני בדיוק בדור התפר, אני כבר זקנה, יש לי ברוך השם 4 נכדים, על זה אני לא אצטנה, זה ההישג הכי, ממש הישג שלי, ישירות. ואני בדיוק בדור ש... רק התחלנו ללמוד, עוד לא היו מדרשות, לא היה שום דבר. והאהבה העמוקה, קיבלתי אותה בבית עם אבא זכרונו לברכה שהיה תלמיד חכם, ולמדתי גמרא והתחתנתי ונולדו ילדים. אבל במהלך כל השנים האלה הרגשתי שיש משהו אחד שפשוט מפיל אותי פעם אחר פעם, ולא הצלחתי לשים את האצבע על המכנה המשותף. עד אותו ערב שהתבקשתי על ידי אחותי לנסות לעזור לאישה שהיא חברה שלה, הייתה בת בית אצלנו, אנחנו כולנו היינו בחתונה שלה, הוריי זיכרונה לברכה, כל האחיות, ולא היה לנו מושג שזמן קצר אחרי החתונה שלה היא התחילה לקבל מכות רצח מבעלה. ואני בחורונת, עם שני פיצקלח, עובדת משרה וחצי בשביל הפרנסה, אחותי מתקשרת, אומרת, את חייבת לעזור לנו. עכשיו תבינו, זה אחות שקיבלתי כל כך הרבה מכות ממנה בילדות, שעד היום כשהיא מתקשרת אני עושה ככה, בטלפון מנועת, כן, מה הפעם? אין לי בכלל מחשבה לסרב לה, אבל הטלפון ההוא הייתי מוכרחה, אמרתי לה, תגידי, את משוגעת? את יודעת מה זה לעזור לאישה לקבל גט? את יודעת כמה חומר צריך ללמוד? על מה את מדברת בכלל? היא אמרה לי, אין לנו זמן לפינוקים שלך, היא מגיעה אלייך הערב. וזה היה ערב של משבר אישי ממש, למרות שזה לא הלב נקרא לי לראות אותה, כי אני אוהבת אותה, ואני מודיע לכם שלא הייתי מזהה אותה ברחוב, נכנס אליי בית הצל אדם, אבל אני חוויתי משבר אישי של ממש. משום שנכון שגדלתי בבית ציוני דתי, אבל החינוך היה שהדרך שלנו ההורים הוא הצעה, וכל אחד יבנה את חייו בעתיד, ואת הקשר שלו אם יהיה קיים עם בורא עולם, על פי מה שהוא יעשה. ואני באופן מאוד אקטיבי בחרתי לחיות חיי הלכה אורתודוקסי. לא רק לחיות אותם, אלא להיות מאושרת מזה שאולי, אולי אני תורמת במשהו קטן לרצונן של הבנות שעבדתי איתן אז, בלומדן גמרא והיכרות עמוקה יותר עם מקורות הקיום היהודי, אולי הן תרצנה יותר לקיים. ויושבת מולי אישה, ואני פותחת את התיק שלה, היא צילמה העתק של מה שהוגש לבית הדין, ואני אומרת בליבי, זאת ההלכה שלך מלכה. כן, כן, זאת ההלכה שלך, זה מה שהיא עושה. ואני מתאפקת, מתאפקת, בסוף הערב אני אומרת לה, תראי, אני אעשה כל מאמץ כדי לנסות לעזור, אבל את חייבת להבין, אמרתי גם לאחותי, זה יכול לקחת חודשים. היא אוי ואבוי לי אם אני אעמוד בבית הדין והקשקש. אם אני רוצה לעזור לך, אני חייבת לשלוט במה שאני מדברת. וזה אוקיינוס של לימוד. אני זוכרת שלא עצמתי עין כל אותו הלילה, ואמרתי בליבי, אני חייבת ללמוד כדי לעזור לה, אבל לא פחות מזה כדי לעזור לעצמי. כי אני לא אשאר מחויבת למערכת חוקים שיוצרת זוועה שכזו. לא אשאר. ומזל שאני נשואה לאחד מלמדוו צדיקים, שהבין את המצוקה, באמת, הייתי באמת במצוקה נפשית באותו לילה, כי אדם שהוא קצת ישר, לא יכול דבר כזה לטטא, כשחשוב לו לעצב את חייו. בסופו של דבר, ברוך השם, עזרנו לה, והמוטיבציה שלי לעיסוק בהלכה, אני עד היום לא יודעת מי כתב את הערך שלי בוויקיפדיה, אבל נורא מעצבן אותי שכתוב שם לוחמת לזכויות נשים, לא בגלל שזה לא נכון. ודאי שזה נכון. הנה, אני מתחילה עם מה שהכריח אותי להיכנס להלכה בכלל. אלא בגלל שמקור המוטיבציה שלי הוא אמונה, והיום גם ברוך השם ידיעה, שלא ייתכן שההלכה תיצור עוול אנושי. לא ייתכן. ואבל אנושי זה האישה שסיפרתי עליה, ולא פחות מזה, הילדה שפרצה השבת לבית כנסת, ובעצם מספצה קלי, מה קרה? אנחנו חייבים אותך בחוץ. אמרתי, מה קרה? חשבתי, אולי ילד נפל, מדמם או משהו, ונקלעתי למריבה הלכתית קולנית. הילדים שיחקו בכדור, והטענה של בעל הכדור הייתה שהבחור שבעת, ילד בן שש, בעת את זה בכוונה לקוצים, ובגלל זה הכדור התפוצץ. ואנחנו לא יודעים עכשיו מבחינה הלכתית אם הוא צודק שהוא מכריח אותו ואומר לו, הערב במוצא שבת אתה תביא את הכסף של הכדור, או לא, כי הוא בוכה פה וצועק שהוא לא עשה את זה בכוונה. זה בלי לפגוע באף אחד, שאלות של ילדים זה השאלות שאני הכי אוהבת. זה פשוט עונג צרוף. עכשיו נדבר על דברים פחות שמחים. סמכות זה דבר שאפשר לקבל או באופן רשמי, באיזושהי דרך רשמית מוטבית, או על ידי מי שמקבל עליו את הסמכות שלך. בינתיים נשים נמצאות, גם אם יש תעודות רשמיות או מה כאלו ואחרות מצוינות, כמו תוכנית בנשמעת, או עדיין הנשים הן במצב שצריך לקבל את הסמכות שלהן. לפני 5 שנים, לא, נתחיל כך, לפני 23 שנים פנתה אליי וסוחן הספרה, זכר צדיקה לברכה, הייתה ממקדימות זמנה, שהיא הולכת להוציא ספר עם הרב מיכה הלפרין, של מאמרים שכולם מאמרים הלכתיים שהיא כתבה על ידי נשים. אמרתי לה, תגידי, אז מה את רוצה ממני? שאני העורכת הלשונית? מה את רוצה? איך אני קשורה לספר הזה? היא אמרה לי, את הולכת לכתוב בו מאמר. אמרתי לה, מה את אומרת? באמת? אני לא יודעת מספיק. היא אמרה לי, סושיבי את הלא משנה מה שלך, תלמדי, תדעי ותכתבי. עכשיו, מי שהכיר את חנה ידע שהיא קצת דומה לאחותי, לא מסרבים לה, זה לא עובד. וכך יצא הספר הזה, Jewish Legal Binding the Woman. ויש בו 17 מאמרים באנגלית, ואני בחורה מסורתית, כתבתי בעברית. רעדתי מפחד, כי כתבתי פה בנושא מורכב, של טיפול בהורים ש... בשל גילם הם כבר לא כל כך. וכתבתי דברים שמבוססים לגמרי על המקורות שהבאתי, אבל לא כל כך מקובלים בעולם הרבני. ורדתי מפחד, ועד היום אני חווה את חיי לדבורי רוס, שכתבה פה את המאמר על הפריה חוץ גופית באישה פנויה. ברוך השם, כל האש עברה על דבורי. ואז אמרתי, מצוין. כל פעם תדאגי מלכה שזה יהיה ככה, שיהיה לך מישהו ש... ושאלתי את חנה, אז תגידי, למה לא ראיתי אפילו מאמר ביקורת אחד בעיתונות? כלום! אז אמרה לי, נו, זה ישראלים האינפנטילים האלה, ספר שכתוב רובו באנגלית, לא התייחסו אליו. ואני חושבת שהיה שם משהו יותר עמוק. ואני מיד אגיע לזה. לפני 5 שנים זכיתי באמת בזכות, במתנה גדולה, לכתוב את הספר הזה, שזה ספר שוטים בעצם. כל פרק שלו זה שאלה הלכתית שנשאלתי, והתשובה שעניתי. הספר מחולק ל3 שערים, וזה מביא אותי לעוד נושא חשוב. ענייני נשים, בכל אופן אי אפשר. קדיש, הנחת תפילין על ידי נשים. השער השני זה ענייני משפחה. אני פשוט הלכתי על מה חשוב לי בחיים. וכל הדברים שקשורים בהתפתחות של משפחה, יחס להורים וכו'. והשער השלישי הוא דילמות שאנחנו חיים אותם פה בארץ. אני חושבת שיש חשיבות אדירה שנשים ייכנסו לשיח ההלכתי בכל נושא. ממש בכל נושא. אין לי סמיכה לרבנות, לא יכולה להיות לי מבחינת החוק. וגם אם היה מגיע לפה נציג של הרבנות ואומר לי, קחי מתנה, ממני, סמיכה לרבנות. הייתי אומרת לו, בכל הכבוד הרי אני מאוד מודה, לא רוצה את זה. דרך הסמיכה לרבנות אני מנוגדת להלכה ומחפירה. ובגינה יש לנו רב ראשי שישב בכלא וכו'. הסמיכה רשמית מאוד לא מרשימה אותי. מה שכן חשוב הוא שיהיו דוברות הלכה בכל הנושאים. כי יש לי ניסיון, ברוך השם רב, בישיבה עם קבוצות של רבנים וחשיבה משותפת. לא רוצה להחליף את הרבנים חס ושלום. יש גדולי תורה ענקיים שאני לומדת מהם לא רק תורה, אלא גם מנשלח קייט. ולדוגמה, כשהקמנו את פורום תקנה, 2 ימים לא קיבלנו בכלל תלונות על פגיעות מיניות, אלא רק ישבנו ועיצבנו את דרכי הפעולה של הפורום. תראו, לטפל בתלונות על פגיעות מיניות, בהתחשב באיסור לשון הרע, חובת לא תעמוד על דם רעך, זה מסובך שאין לכם מושג. אז אני ישבתי כמובן עם חבורת גדולי התורה ש... וחשבתי בליבי, זה היה יכול להיות חגיגה של אבסורד שיושבים חבורת גברים, מדברים על דרכי התנהלות עם נפגעות תקיפה מינית, ואין שם אפילו אישה אחת בחדר שמכירה את השפה. וזה קריטי, כי בעבודה משותפת אפשר להגיע לדברים עצומים. ויש לנו בלי עין הרע אתגרים. לא רק בחיי הפרט, לא רק בחיי המשפחות והקהילה. מדינת ישראל נמצאת היום במצב נורא והיום. מוסרית ערכית והלכתית, והקדוש ברוך הוא, בבקשה, אל תקשיב, כי אני מוצאת את עצמי כמה שבועות כבר קטגורם של ישראל. ואנשים מחפשים בנרות, אנשי רוח אמיתיים, שירוננו קצת את העסק. ואני חושבת שמעורבות נשים בשיח ההלכתי קריטית לשיח הישראלי, ממש, אבל לא פחות מזה לקשר בין ישראל ליהדות התפוצות. לא פחות מזה. והתרומה יכולה להיות כבירה, ואני חושבת שאני צריכה לסיים. אז לקראת סיום אני אתן רק דוגמה אחת. אני כיהנתי בשמחה, וזה היה האתגר הכי קשה בתחום הזה של ההלכה, כיהנתי כחברת ועדת סל התרופות של משרד הבריאות, בזמנה של יעל גרמן, השרה, רק אז אפשר היה לחלום שהרב בוועדה תהיה אישה, ואז היא ביקשה שאני... ואני רעדתי עם פחד, אני אומרת לכם את האמת, כי יש נושאים במדינה שהמדינה חייבת ללכת על פי הלכה. למשל מעמד אישי, חוק שיפוט בתי הדין הרבניים, האם אתה נשוי, גרוש, ממזר, האם אתה יהודי בכלל, זה חייב להיות על פי הלכה, זה חוק המדינה. חוק המדינה אומר שחוק ההלכה הוא חוק המדינה. אז בזה חייבים. אבל בסל התרופות, מי חייב להקשיב לך? יותר חמור מזה, מי ירצה להקשיב לך בכלל? הדימוי של התורה וההלכה הוא בקרשים. וראיתי את מה שראיתי הרבה פעמים קודם, אבל פעם זה היה בוועדה הממלכתית של מדינת ישראל. שכשאת מתנהגת בצורה מכובדת, ומימה או מהירת פנים, אז אנשים לא רק רוצים להקשיב, אלא כמהים להקשיב. עד כדי כך שזה הגיע שיושב ראש הוועדה היה פרופסור יונתן הלוי, עד לא מזמן מנהל בית החולים שערי צדק, והוא באחת הפעמים דפק על השולחן ואמר, חברים, אי אפשר לפתוח פה בית מדרש על כל בקשה. והסתכל עליי, אמרתי, אמרי, זה לא אני אשמה, זה הם. משום שנוצר כזו סקרנות לדעת את נקודת המבט ההלכתית. ממש מורכבת. ואני אסיים בזה שעבורי זו הייתה טעות חיים לכתוב את הספר הזה. הייתה יכולה להיות טעות חיים. כל היום הצועקת, נשים מסוגלות ללמוד, נשים ראויות להיות פוסקות. טוב, בואי נראה מה כתבת פה, בואי נראה איך בכלל מסוגלת להבין מקור הלכתי. זהו, אני אפילו ביושרי לא הייתי יכולה להשים את ההוצאה, כי הם ממש היו בסדר, הם לא שינו עוד בלי ידיעתי. נשים יכולות ראוי וצריכות לפסוק הלכה. המחסום המרכזי היום לסיפור הזה זה האורתודוקסיה. המחסום העיקרי לסיפור הזה זה דווקא הציונות הדתית. הספר הזה לא יצא. הוא לא יצא. בעיתון מקור ראשון הם לא הסכימו לכתוב אפילו שתי שורות של הגיעו למערכת. יש כזה מדור, הגיעו למערכת שולחים, והגיע ספר למערכת. ברוך השם בציבור, ברוך השם. אני רק אסיים בקוריוז, שכשעמדתי להוציא את הספר, שאלו אותי בהוצאה, תגידי, את לא רוצה לצרף הסכמות? אמרתי, גם אם אני רוצה, אני לא אביך אף אחד בלבקש את זה. כי אף אחד לא יסכים לכתוב הסכמות לספר, זה משתי סיבות. קודם כל, יש פה פרקים מקוממים, כמו למשל, מה האחריות הרבנים כשאחד מהם מתנהג באופן לא ראוי, מה הם צריכים לעשות, ועל מה הם עוברים כשהם שותקים. אז איזה רב יהיה מוכן לשבור את נאמנות הגילדה? חוץ מזה שיש פה פרקים, שבאופן מאוד קל, לא התאמצתי הרבה, הצלחתי להוכיח שהשיח ההלכתי הציבורי לא רק לא על פי ההלכה, אלא מנוגד להלכה. כמו למשל בנושא של תכנון ילודה. לא ניכנס כרגע לפרט הזה, אבל הדרך היא דרך קשה. אם בנות שואלות אותי אם להיכנס למסלול הזה, אני מבטיחה להם בחיוך חיים קשים, אבל מאוד מאוד מספקים במובן של עיסוק אנושי באמת האלוהית וכוונה לדעת אלוה כפי, כן, כפי שאת הקטנה מבינה מה המשמעות של תורה ועבודת השם באמת. תודה רבה.
Should we just open? Okay. Our panelists are willing and eager to hear your responses, your questions, your clarifications. Anyone like to begin?
I'm Shulamit Magnus, and I teach about this, I write about it, and I live it. I want to thank you very much for doing this panel. I think it's terrific, and I have tremendous respect for each of you, and I've learned a lot from what each of you have said, and I hope to learn more. But I have some fundamental questions. When I saw the announcement and I saw the title, Hilchot Nashim, I was indeed wondering how women who are other in this tradition relate to being inside it and speaking in its name. So one word that I did not hear from anybody is that this system is androcentric. When you talk about women at the table, women may be now putting themselves at the table, and it's only because women have pushed that we're there. But women were not at the table when the rules were written. The rules were written by men. The rules are androcentric, meaning that they come from the experience and the lens of male experience. I don't blame that. I mean, there was nothing else that was conceivable thousands of years ago, or even hundreds of years ago, or even 50 years ago. So that's not the fight. But the issue is, nonetheless, so as I say, I don't have to tell you this, but Shisha Sidrei Mishnah, one of them is Nashim, right? Nothing could speak more loudly that the system is androcentric than having a seder about Nashim when we don't have a seder on Nashim. The whole thing is ridiculous to even think of it. I mean, we could write one. We sure could. But they never could imagine such a thing. Or to have a book where we discuss Kaddish and Birkat Gomel, and I don't know what the third one was, Hanachat Tfilin, was it? I don't know. Eh?
Kriyat Megillah.
Kriyat Megillah. Would we ever have such a book where we ask about men's relationship to these things? So if we get to a point where women are using these rules, I mean, I just had a back and forth with Nitzan Kaspi Shiloni, okay, you saw that article, about Isha Katlanit. If we were writing the rules, would we ever construct such a thing? There is no such thing as a woman Isha Katlanit. There is no such thing. It's a constructed category, right? If we were writing the rules, we would never write such a rule. There is no analogous category for men. Even though, even at a time when women were dying in childbirth all the time, and the man is responsible directly.
Is there anyone on the panel who would like to? But what's the exact question?
So how do you relate to this? How do you relate to the fact that you're an honorary man? You're speaking as an honorary man.
Do you want to respond?
I most certainly do not feel that I am speaking as an honorary man. I feel your pain, and I sometimes feel those feelings of anger and frustration of reading texts that speak about me as other, who are written by people who don't understand me. I personally don't feel there's another choice, i.e., I happen to love Torah. I believe it is the covenant that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made with the Jewish people. I also believe that human beings have a very big hand in the playing out of halacha and Torah Shebaal Peh. I, at my core, think that's what Chazal believed was their role. And so I also don't think that you keep saying the rules are written by men. Some of the core sources are written by men, but the way I see the halachic process, it's alive. It's continuing. It's not over. And so when I add my voice to this conversation, and when I hope my students' voices are added to the conversation, we become part of the conversation. And so you're right. There's a lot of wrongs that need to be righted.
And hopefully the halachic process will go in a way that will start to recognize what women's reality is. But for me personally, the choices were I don't know what give up would look like. I'm not interested in creating another religion. This is my Yerusha as I've received it. So I'm just doing my best to take it forward into the future, which what I believe is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants for me. And so the thing that I believed in, what I hope that this book shows, is that the breadth of halachic possibilities on any topic, whether it's to have to do with women, and you're quite right, there isn't, right, Judaism is Hilchot Anashim or Gavrim or whatever you want to say. I hear your point very well, and it's a very important point, but I don't see there's another choice for us. I'm not wanting to create something else. This is meaningful for me in many, 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 many ways. And I think that the possibility that is within the breath of halachic nature is so wide that that when our voices are added, I think the new Torah that is revealed is going to be one that reflects who we are. I'll say one more sentence. One of the greatest, and probably my students have heard me say this, but it's important to me. For me, one of the most clear experiences of the divine in this world is that I exist, is the beauty and the miraculousness of human beings, of that we are alive, that all the parts of our body function, that we have these things called brains that are incredible. I believe that the divine has created me and therefore must know what I'm like. I know what I'm like, and then I have the texts. At least I don't know if we differ on this. For me, I really see human voice within these texts. It doesn't surprise me some of the things that it says in the Mishnah are being said in the second century. They make sense there. The pain, for me at least, is when you want to take those second century things and apply them to the 21st century without any progress and development. And to me, that's not what halacha is. Halacha is the core was there, the divine spark is there, but then human beings in the second century had to interpret it for their lives today, and then in the 15th century, and then in the 21st century. And for me, the way that Torah is eternal is not that it never changes, but that Torah is eternal because it speaks to each new generation and understands what's happening in that generation and has something to say for that generation. And so luckily for us in this generation, we're on the cusp of something incredible. I hope that people are hearing the needs of women, people are hearing the voice of women, and that maybe in the next generation we won't have to have a book that's called Hilchot Nashim. We'll have a book that's just called Hilchot Shabbat or Hilchot whatever, and it will include all the genders. That's how I feel. It doesn't take away the pain. It doesn't mean that I don't cry sometimes and feel frustration sometimes, but I don't see another path. And I talked a long time. I don't know.
אני אומר, קודם כל, אחותיית. לא, באמת. צריך לדעת את זה, חיבוטי נפש הם לא פשוטים. כשבאתי לחבד את פרופסור אלי שלוי, שאני חייבת לה הרבה מאוד בחיים, ולתת לה את העותק של הספר, היא צעקה לבת שלה, פנינה, פנינה, בואי תראי מישהי שעוד לא התייאשה מהרבנים האורתודוקסים. ואמרתי לה, אני גם לא אתייאש, אני אכריח אותם להקשיב. למה? כי קיבלנו, בתחילת השבוע קיבלנו כולנו יחד את התורה. וחזל לימדו אותנו שלא קראת הקדוש ברוך הוא ברית עם ישראל, אלא על דברים שבעל פה. עם השיחה שרחל תארה, השיחה בינינו בכל דור עם הקדוש ברוך הוא, לא תמשיך להתפתח. אנחנו עכשיו קוראים בתלמוד שיחה שנעצרה, ואנחנו חייבים להמשיך אותה, רבנים ונשים. ואת השיחה הזו אפשר להמשיך רק עם היכרות עמוקה של ארגז הכלים. אני תמיד חושבת שגם עד היום רוב האינסטלטורים הם גברים. אבל אם אינסטלטור מוכן שאני אלמד את ארגז הכלים שלו וידע כשמשהו מאוד סתום, איך פותחים את זה, עם איזה כלי, אולי גם מהצד השני כלי אחר, אז אני יכולה להפוך לאינסטלטורית, וכך אני רואה את העיסוק שלי בהלכה. יש רגעים מאוד קשים, התסכול לא מתחיל מחזל, התסכול מתחיל מהקדוש ברוך הוא. יש הרבה דברים שאני לא מבינה, לא רק ביחס לנשים, גם מצוות רבות אחרות, אבל ברגע שהחלטתי, ואני מחליטה כל יום מחדש, שאני מאמינה בדרך הזו, מאמינה בבורא עולם, ומאמינה במתודה, כשאני מתגלת בסתימה, אני שוב מסתכלת בארגז הכלים, ותאמיני לי, שגם לנוכח סוגיות שנראות כבלתי פתירות, אני רק אזרוק, בסדר? למשל, נטייה חד מינית, זה נראה בלתי פתיר בהלכה האורתודוקסית, נכון? לא היא. כאן, אנחנו מגיעים לשאלת המוטיבציה. כשיש מוטיבציה לאנשי ההלכה לפתוח סתימות, הם יודעים בדיוק באיזה כלי להשתמש כדי שהמים ימשיכו לזרום. אנחנו צריכים לעורר את המוטיבציה.
So this is a question that's technical about Hilchot Nashim, the book, but I think that has a larger ramification. So I thought it was interesting that you mentioned that there's no psak halacha at the end, that it's just a collection of sources, and then the reader can kind of pick from there what they would like. So that made me immediately think of psak shopping and the worry of people making decisions on their own without a rabbi. And I think that it's very interesting that we're having a discussion about women rabbis when I think the main issue, one of the issues in the 21st century is that we have so much knowledge accessible to everyone. And I guess the question is, what do you think the role of a rabbi is in the 21st century with Google? Can we really make our own decisions? That seems to be the suggestion of the book. And then, like, what is the role of women rabbis then in all of that?
Okay. So I'll start in terms of saying something about the book. I could say just about the piece that I wrote. It's not just a throwing out of sources and saying, you know, let everyone make their own decision and pick whichever source they want. There's a section of sources, and then at the end there are possible conclusions. And I know with mine there were several possible, I assume that they're all in the same.
I just want to say the structure. At the beginning of every section, there's questions, clear questions, halachic questions that one is trying to understand the answer from. There's the section of sources, and then there's a summary and conclusion. So it isn't that every single thing is possible. It might be to say that the normative halakha and majority of poskim think this, but there is X, Y, and Z who think otherwise. And to have it be that you could hear the possibility of both things, that's just the book. I'll let you finish answering the question, and then I'll...
Okay. Okay. Yeah, so in other words, I think that there's a range of possibilities that are halachically legitimate that are presented for the person to think about, okay? That's in this book, which was originally written as halachic source guides. It was originally called Tashma, and it was source guides where a chavruta could get together if they wanted to learn about a topic and sit and learn about it. Okay, when you come to the question of psak, and then what's the role of a rabbanit, one thing that I could say in terms of how do I see my role when someone comes to me with a halachic question. Okay, so I'm going to say it very simply. There's certain times where I see my role as to give a specific answer. Okay, someone asks me a question, you know, a dairy spoon fell into a meat pot, and these are the circumstances, what do I do? Okay? So in a situation like that, I'll try to explain the halachic principles behind it, but I'll basically give a set answer. Here's what you do with a spoon, or here's what you do with a pot. But I think that might be the minority of questions, okay? There are other questions where it's not just about an objective reality. Okay, there are many halachic questions today which are about the interaction of halacha
in my life, in your life, in the life of the particular questioner, okay? And it could be questions relating to birth control, okay? That was mentioned here. It's an issue where there isn't the same answer for every person who asks the same question, because the person's life situation comes into the picture. And sometimes with questions like that, there are multiple answers that we can offer, and I can tell them, this is what the majority of poskim would say. Here's a position that you know, yeshal mi lismoch, there's what to rely on, but it's not something that, you know, is in widespread practice. And I could give them a range of halachic opinions. There is no such thing as the halacha, okay? There's a range, okay? From the earliest sources, there's machloket, there's multiple opinions. And what I see my role is to be a mitavech. Trying to think of a good translation, though. It's not a real estate agent, but
an intermediary,
an interpreter, to try to give over, this is what the halakha says, and to try to also give over, and this is what the halakha could say in your position. And this is the range of where halakha can be more lenient, because halakha is not detached from reality. Halakha, it's in conversation with reality, in conversation with the individual circumstances. And I want to put that in the table in an explicit way. And whereas maybe a rabbi of the past would see something as an issue of psak, and someone could come with a very difficult life circumstances and put it all on the table and tell their story for 20 minutes and ask their question, and the rabbi could answer with like yes or no, you know, there's something in the process here that's different, okay? And there are times where I also say no. There are times where I don't necessarily feel, and maybe Rabbi Malka and I differ on this, where there are times where there isn't always a way to make it work in a way that everyone can be happy, that the halakha can be, right, okay, and the person themselves. But in those situations, I talk to the person and I tell them honestly, this is one of the situations where we have to go ahead and accept the halakha and accept it and go forward. So that's, I hope, a little bit of the practice of how it looks. And
אני אגיד רק בקצרה, אני לא, אם הובנתי חלילה שאפשר להתיר הכל, ממש לא. לא זו הייתה הכוונה שלי. הכוונה הייתה שאני מאמינה ויודעת שהתורה היא תורת חיים במובן שלא ייתכן שתהיה סוגיית חיים, בסדר? סוגיית חיים שהלכה תאמר, אין לי מה לומר לגביה, גמרנו, מצטערת. ורק מכוח האמונה הזו אני פועלת, כי באמת זה האתגר של תורת ישראל כתורה נצחית, זה האתגר, ולומר, אין לי תשובה, כמו שרבנים רבים רבים אמרו לי, לגבי בנים שהתייעצו איתי והיו עובדי השם באמת ובאמונה, אבל כמו שהם היו ישרים ביחס לזהות האמונית דתית שלהם, הם גם היו ישרים ביחס לזהות המינית שלהם. וכשרבנים אומרים אין תשובה, בעצם אומרים פה משהו מאוד חריף, צריך להגיד את זה. הם אומרים, אתה לא יכול לחיות עם שתי הזהויות האלה, אתה חייב לוותר על אחת מהן, על הזהות הדתית שלך או על הזהות המינית שלך. איך אני יכולה בשם הקדוש ברוך הוא שהוא אמת ותורת ישראל שהיא אמת לומר לו דבר כזה? זה לא ייתכן. אז אני מדברת על סוגיות חיים שההלכה חיית. הערב עניתי תשובה למישהי, אני מצטערת, אבל חרף כל הבירורים שלי זה אסור, שאלה שהיא שאלה. בסדר גמור, זה חלק מהסיפור. אגב, אפילו ציבור שאיננו שומר מצוות, ברגע שהם רואים שאת רואה אותו, את מקשיבה לו, את שוברת את הראש בשבילו, מתייעצת, וחוזרת ואומרת, תראה, זה על פי ההלכה היהודית, זה אסור, והמדינה החליטה שזה החוק וכו'. דבר אחרון שאני אומר בקצרה, זה שנורא שמחתי לשמוע אותך, שאת אמרת על הפרקים בספר, שהם יוצרים מנעד, יוצרים ספקטרום של ההלכה. כי הרבה פרקים בספר שלי מסתיימים בהערה של השואל או השואלת, אני ניגשתי אלייך כדי שתגידי לי מה לעשות, ואת רק סיבכת לי את החיים. מהסיבה הפשוטה, שכמו שהרבנית שלי היא תיארה יפהפה, ההלכה היא מפגש בין עקרונות היסוד לאינדיבידום וליישום סובייקטיבי של העקרונות האלה על אדם מסוים. אז אם בחור שואל אותי אם הוא חייב להיות בתהליך של אשפוז כפוי של אבא שלו, זה אחד הפרקים, אז אנחנו מבררים מה ההיבטים ההלכתיים, ובסוף אני אומרת לו, זה יהיה יותר מחוצפה שאני אגיד לך אם אתה חייב או לא. אני לא מכירה אותך לעומק, אני לא מכירה את אבא לעומק, את אמא שגם נעזרת בך. אתה תצטרך לקחת את העניינים ההלכתיים שדיברנו בהם וליישם אותם, ממש כמו שאם חלילה יש לי בעיה רפואית, אני ניגשת לרופא, כי אני לא יודעת רפואה, אני אוכלה לעשות בגוגל, ואני אוכל להקשות על הרופא יותר אולי מפעם. אבל בסוף, עם כל הכבוד לי, אני לא רופאה, אני אשמע דעה שנייה. אבל הלכה זה לא כלי שאמור להסיר אחריות מבני אדם על החיים שלהם. ההפך הוא הנכון. רב הוא לא מנהל חיים של הזולת בשום אופן.
I think we have time for maybe one brief question.
I think the title of this shiur maybe misleading, because it says women writing halakha. It should be really women interpreting halakha. And I think that's maybe why there's maybe the kav in it. You know, we're not writing halakha. It's been written. I think it's interpretation. And I just feel that maybe
okay, thank you. Actually, there's another gentleman. Maybe we'll hear a second question, and hopefully you can just take one more question, and then you can address both questions. Hopefully they...
I'm not sure it compliments, but this is not around the issue of psak halakha. What I wanted to ask, since you all learned in halakha, is that there have been times in Jewish life over the last 1,000, 1,500 years, 2,000 years, where actually there's been, I won't call it a creation of halakha, but ways of dealing with the halakha that are not completely obvious. I'll give an example. You know, the whole idea, for example, of carrying in the street on Shabbat, you know, if you just read the Torah, it's pretty simple. You don't do it. And then they create an Erev. Or chametz on Pesach. What do you do with your chametz? You sell it. The loss of money through Yovel, the creation of a Prisbol. And now what I'm wondering is, what are your thoughts about how, not psak halakha, or not even a choice of halakha, if you have six choices, but how does a Jewish community work when there's a problem that's not being solved to do this in a halachic manner? And who does it?
I think the question was about interpreting halakha as opposed to writing halakha, and innovation in halakha, the limits of. I mean, obviously, in 5 minutes, you're not going to be able to catch, but if you can address, and so also maybe make your concluding remarks for this evening, as we are coming to the end.
Okay, I didn't completely understand each question. I think I disagree with you. I think that halakha isn't something in the past that stays concrete and then there's only interpretation of it. Halakha is a living thing, because law sounds concrete, but halakha is movement. And so each new interpretation, each new understanding, each new situation in which it gets applied is new halakha. It isn't that there's old halakha that stays concrete, or at least that's my understanding of it. So
to this question, because it's as if we're making a loophole.
But to me, it's not the loophole. That is halacha. Halacha is to, Torat Chaim is to live. It's halacha is the way in which a Jew needs to live out their lives. So if we create electricity that didn't exist before, now we need to understand, how do I use this electricity? How is it? Is it Aish? Is it? Can I use it on Shabbat? Can I use it on Yom Tov? What could I use a Shabbat clock? I need to. They're all new situations, so I'm using past meta halachic concepts and sources to apply to situations, but it's all halacha. And in the, my daughter's making a face. She doesn't agree with me. I don't know. I'm just looking at my daughter sitting directly behind me, so I'm looking at you, and then I see that. Said that. But and I think meaning the challenges that Malka raised for what, how is halacha going to speak to the halachic LGBT community is something that is playing out now in real time that we need to figure out. What's that going to look like? How is that going to play out? These are real situations that are happening in the lives of the Jewish people. And halacha has to have something to say. Correct. It might not say yes, it might not say oh, but it has to say something because that's what Torat Chaim is. That's my understanding of it. So when you call halachic loopholes or... So what was your question? What was your question? Okay, I understand the question now. I don't know what my colleagues would say. I think that obviously when we had a Sanhedrin making big halachic changes, it's one thing for Hillel to stand up and institute a principle. It's harder for someone today. But that doesn't mean that we don't have those type of things still happening. And the process by which they happen is a little more murky. And sometimes they happen because someone who has big enough shoulders, and I think this has to do with the samchut, it's when people listen, when the Jewish community is willing to listen, that they happen. Right? The problem of aguna is a problem of changed women who can't get out of it. The Jewish world, for the past X number of years, has been trying to figure out solutions of how to deal with it. Different people have made different solutions. Slowly, over time, more support gets garnered or comes together, let's say, for some type of prenuptial agreement. The details of that prenuptial agreement, there still could be argument about, but I think it's a process that I don't know if it's thought out clearly how it works, but there's a problem. People try to answer the problem. If people's arguments are considered legitimate and communities start listening to them, they gain momentum, more rabbanim come behind them, and then we have new things that are invented. I think maybe prenups are a good example. I could bring other, the case that happened in the Rabbanut where someone tried to apply the case of zikui get to a man who unfortunately was a vegetable. So that was a very radical application of a new idea, and he got a lot of pushback on it. But I think that's how it plays out. People say radical things. We see how the community reacts. We see how other people react, and it gathers momentum. Am I supposed to be ending? Okay. Can I read something as a conclusion from the book? Very short.
Okay. I just want to say, following on what Rav Rachel just said, I think that with a lot of the new contemporary issues that come up, we're not talking about inventing new things, yesh me'ayin, right? We're not inventing something from nothing, because I do believe, and I think that we all believe, that the tradition is there. In other words, what's in the Gemara, what's in the earlier sources is there. I think that sometimes the question today is about the limits of our interpretation, or the limits of halachic application, and talking about the issue of aguna, or misura vot get, there are solutions that are given in the Gemara that
that haven't been used in practice. And then there's the question of why haven't they been used, and is it legitimate to go back to something when we're not inventing it today, but where it has grounds in the Gemara? And can we go back and say, well, it was put there, and it hasn't been used for hundreds of years or thousands of years, but we're going to use it today, and we're going to apply it today. And then the question becomes one of consensus and of whether the person who applies it, do they have the shoulders to apply it, and does the community follow behind them and validate their application of it in saying when someone performs Hafkas Kiddushin for this woman, does then someone agree to be the Mesader Kedushin for her remarriage? Okay? And does the community accept her future children as legitimate and allow them to get married in the state of Israel? So it spurs various questions in terms of communal acceptance. But ultimately, I believe that the seeds for solving any contemporary problem today are found in the Gemara. Right? In other words, we have some of the most innovative medical procedures that didn't exist, that not even a hint of them existed in the time of the Gemara, and yet, for something like IVF, we're able to find the example in the Gemara of a woman who becomes pregnant in a bathtub from sperm that was lying there, and we say, here's a remez, here's a hint to something, to be able to speak to something that we thought was just contemporary. It's not just contemporary. If we turn and we look in the Torah, hafuch ba v'hafuch ba dekula ba, we're going to find everything in the Torah. We're going to find the answers, the blueprint, even to the most modern of problems. And I really think, and various comments that were made, I don't want to take issue with specific comments, but I really feel that at the base of being part of the halachic conversation as men or as women has to be a belief in the system, a belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and a belief in the sources of our tradition, Mishnah, the Gemara, the basic sources, a belief in them. And I think that it's only if we have that we can move forward in the tradition and as women add our voices to the tradition and not in creating a different religion, which is certainly not the desire of any of us. So.
טוב, אני אשתדל באמת בקצרה. נקודת החוזק הכבירה של ההלכה היא נקודת החולשה שלה. אותו דבר עצמו. וזה שההלכה היא מעשה ידי אדם. אין מה לעשות. בסוף ההלכה היא פרי של יצירה אנושית. כשאני אומרת בני אדם, אני אומרת מחשבה, רגישות, יצירתיות, גמישות. אבל אני גם אומרת, אל תגלו לאף אחד שיקולים פוליטיים, אגו ושאר ירקות. ואני מגיעה לנקודה השנייה שמתקשרת ישירות, בגלל שההלכה היא מעשה ידי אדם, יש תפקיד למעצביה, אבל לא פחות מזה למקיימיה. אני נמצאת פה הערב הזה לא בשביל ש... קודם כל אני רוצה לגייס את כל הצעירות מאחורה לכולל שכנראה אני לעולם לא אפתח כבר ללימוד הלכה, אבל אני נמצאת לכבוד הציבור הקדוש שהגיע לפה הערב, כי זה ציבור שעוצר את שטף החיים הקשים האינטנסיביים, אומר רגע, אני רוצה לחשוב על היבטים קיומיים של החיים שלי, של האמונה שלי, והציבור חייב לומר את דברו. לקראת סיום הערב אני אגלה לכם סוד. שום הלכה מעולם לא התהוותה ולא השתנתה בלי דחיפה של מקיימיה ומענה לעתים מאוחר מדי ולעתים ברוך השם בזמן של מעצביה. אז יש לכל אחד ואחת מאיתנו תפקיד נכבד ולקדש שם שמיים בעולם, בקרב מאמיניו ובקרב מי שפחות. תודה.
Okay, I want to thank our panelists for this evening. I think we've all been inspired. Malka, I just want to say you said previously a bit of a dark
diagnosis of the situation of the State of Israel today. I feel so much more optimistic seeing the three of you here, knowing you're out there leading, writing, speaking, teaching, inspiring. I am going home, I think, a lot more inspired and optimistic than I came. So thank you so much. Thank you all for coming and participating. And yashar koach. Lechu michayil el chayil.
Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit almad.pardes.org.